Gentile alcoholic.
Yeah.
Billy, you got everything turned on up here? All right, just checking. I like being here. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm really happy about that. You're my people, and I've been listening to you for a long time. It's made all the difference in the world. Sobriety date's May 5th, 1987. I haven't done anything but Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found out what my problem was here. My problem centers in my mind. Okay, and I haven't gotten much farther than that. I found what the solution was here. And every problem that I've suffered from since I got sober, or most are self-induced, and somewhere alcoholism is in there. Because alcoholism by nature is a self-centered illness. Okay. And the longer you stay sober, the more aware you are of that. I got drunk when I was 13 years old on Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill. It was 1972. And I graduated to Mad Dog 2020. I read last year, I Googled it, and what I found in common with Boone's Farm and Mad Dog 2020, neither one of them had ever seen a grape. 1978, I had a change in my life. I discovered Cheech and Chong Up in Smoke. I thought that was a brilliant, brilliant movie, and I wanted to be exactly like that. If there was one thing I wanted to be now, it was a hippie. At the same time, I discovered Jerry Garcia, and I took off. I became so obsessed with that, it was absolutely unbelievable to everybody. I do have an obsessive personality. I came here May 5th, 1987. I've been arrested 11 times. I was kicked off the property of my parents. I was threatened and put on probation and ready to lose a job. I was on high-risk insurance, and I owed $28,000 in bad debt. Not good. And I came and I sat with you, and I'd sat with you before court ordered and things like that, and I had no intention of staying here, and I've been here ever since. Funny how that happens. You know, how do any of us know the day before we came to that meeting where we're going to stay? I didn't. And so I'm 27 years old, and I'm sobering up in the meetings in this area, and I've always liked to be on the road. We were talking about that before the meeting, so I'd go to D.C. and Baltimore. I saw Sandy Beach. I'd go all over. And what I realized that I didn't have the conversation at the bar is that I was in a bottom. That wasn't a conversation we had at the bar, and I realized through your experience that I was in a bottom. And as I sobered up in the meetings, I realized I was very, very tired in that bottom, and I slept for long periods of time. I was just wiped out, didn't know it. And you told me something that I didn't realize either, I didn't have the conversation at the bar, was that this was a progressive illness. It always got worse, it never got better. I took a look at it, and I said, yeah, that's me. And I had no problem after a month with the first step. I didn't have a problem, I just realized it after a month, that I was powerless over alcohol, that my life was unmanageable. And to me, it was one thought process, even though the step is a slash in it. It was one. I wasn't confused at one or other. It both fit me perfectly. I was powerless over alcohol, and I think I got it. I must have got it. I'm still here. Yeah, I think I got it. And I got a whole bunch of hope from you that I could have a different life if I did the things you did. So I started off on my journey in recovery. I took the steps off the wall. I had an off the wall program, and I went through a slew of sponsors. I didn't hire and fire them. It just they either left or they died or they moved or whatever. I went through a slew of sponsors. And at 18 months of sobriety, I met three people that would change my life the rest of my sobriety. I met Joe and Charlie. I met my sponsor in Tifton, Georgia. And I heard Clancy. They had a profound impact that changed me. I didn't hear these voices in the meetings I was going to. I didn't hear anything like that. In fact, in all this area that I was going to, which was a good part of a lot of Virginia and D.C., those things that those men were talking about, I didn't hear in the meetings. Nowadays, we do. We're very fortunate. The voice is in the meetings nowadays. And so I kind of got obsessed there, and I went through the steps with Joe and Charlie. I went through the steps with my sponsor, and I was up in Containing, Pennsylvania in 1988 at a fire hall, and Joe and Charlie came in. They were snowed in the first night. They came the second day on Saturday. And that night, everybody that was going to that conference was in one hotel while it was snowing, and they said, we're going to have a meeting down at this local church. And I went down there, and there was like 30 people in there with big books highlighted. I'd never seen anything like this ever. And the conversation that they were having in the meeting about how to recover through the steps outlined in the big book, I had never heard in the meeting. Now, maybe my ears weren't on, but I hadn't heard it. It was a different language. It was a different conversation. And something happened after Joe and Charlie came in Saturday, and I got lit on fire, and it was almost at a fanatic level. And I probably did everything you could possibly do wrong. I became fanaticized, as I call it. I beat the book up. I used it as a weapon. I didn't intentionally try to do that. I was trying to get the message across. I don't think I was very eloquent. And I was very, very, people call me a big book thumper, big book Al. I took pride in it. I was going along, started a business. It was doing pretty well. I got married. The marriage was going pretty well. All the debt had been paid off by then. The $28,000 had been paid off. I started to accumulate and save money for the first time in my life. Things look good, you know. And, you know, things are going along, and all of a sudden, I'm about 14 and a half years sober, and the bottom drops out. And a guy was building a house. I bought some property. I was building a house, and the guy that I didn't do any references, I've known him for a long, long time, and he ripped me off for most of my retirement that I've been saving. And I was boiling with resentment. I was the grouch in the brainstorm, and a brainstorm of anger. You know. And it came out in the house. I was very unhappy. My business at the same time got sued for $2.5 million. And I got physically sick and ended up in the hospital. And I'm cooking. And they took out my gallbladder. And didn't know what it was, but I stayed physically sick for quite a number of months. Marriage ends up in a separation. I'm unhappy for about 18 months. Talking to my sponsor, reaching out, going to meetings, and something miraculous happened when I look at it now, and nothing is wasted in God's economy. Okay, and I've been so almost with a hint or a touch of religiosity on the big book, is through that pain and being crushed by this phenomenon going on outside of me and bringing it inside of me. I unzipped the big book and I stepped out and I gave up my big book personality. I don't know. I didn't intend to do that. I never had anything on that. You know, I just said no. And I was sitting in Washington, D.C. And this guy said that for 14 years he had been struggling in Alcoholics Anonymous and off and on. He had a pretty good life. He said he got down on meetings about one or two or three a week. He said things weren't going well. He said, my friends in AA told me to start going to a meeting on a daily basis. He said, I started going on the meeting on a daily basis. I'm 16 years sober, and I can't tell you the change in my life that happened through that. And he said, I would not have come up with that. My friends urged me to. I was resistant, but I did it. I said, I'm going to start doing that. And I started going to a meeting. By the time I was 15 years sober, I started going to a meeting on a daily basis and come pretty close to that today. Something changed inside of me, and see, we separate ourselves from each other one judgment at a time. And what I have to be very careful of, the judgmental me, because I really don't know you, okay? I do know you on one level. You're an alcoholic. I got you on that part. But as a people, and I started to embrace people like I never had. And I started sitting in these meetings where I used to ridicule them and put them down, and the cotton fell out of my ears. And Bill Wilson was probably right when he said pain is a touchstone of all spiritual progress. The cotton fell out. I started hearing you for the first time like I hadn't heard you before. I heard your pain. I heard your fear. I heard your resentment. I heard your inadequacy. I heard your self-doubt. I heard your insecurity. I heard your unhappiness. I heard your joy. I heard your success. I heard your hope. And I started to connect on a level that I had never connected on before. And I am not at all here. I love the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm telling you what I did with it, okay? That didn't cause unity in my relationships, okay? I would put people down. They have fellowship sobriety. They go to too many meetings. They need to get a relationship with God. They ought to get the steps better. Ha, ha, ha. And it was wrong for me to do that. It was all ego. And I need to get a punch. And I got a punch. I got a punch to wake up and realize that I needed a connection with you. That connection is so important today. It's probably more important today than it's ever been in my life. You know, and I have a heck of a life. You know, I was in Philadelphia, D.C. the last couple of days. I was in Doylestown, a speakers meeting last night. You know, I got friends all over. I'm a mountain biker. I'm a road biker. So I go all these paths all over the East Coast and into the West. I mean, God's been very kind to me. And I've screwed up more than I can mention. But like I said, all our screw-ups, I have found all my defects are turned into assets. There's a conversion here in God's economy because he doesn't waste this stuff. He takes all of my defects, he turns it into a way that maybe can help somebody else. You know, it's pretty a fabulous thing here. So I'm coming out of this thing, and I've got this really long shelf life resentment, if you will, okay, towards this guy that ripped me off from this money. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm down in the court system. I've got some connections. I've got a lawyer down there. I'm with the Commonwealth Attorney. I'm going to get this guy. And so I called a person, and I said, I just don't know how to do this. I said, you know, I'm in a separation. I've been through all this stuff. I said, I'm just kind of taxed out. And he said, well, why don't we look at this? What is that worth to you? And I said, what do you mean? He said, what's that worth to your peace of mind, that money? And I thought, And he said, you know, what you're going to have to do, and you probably don't want to do it, is you're going to have to forgive this guy. And I said, well, how do I possibly do that? I don't feel like forgiveness. He said, there's nothing about feeling like forgiveness. It's an action. It's not a feeling. Helped me out tremendously. He said, why don't you start by dropping the lawsuit that you're working on? And I did it. And it's not like the first night or the first week or several months later. I mean, I'm still... But I found that, you know, the funny thing is here is that we're just passing through. Never had that happen before. Child.
You don't have a fire alarm.
So what I have found that these are just moments in time, that these problems aren't stuck with me the rest of my life. You know, we have a slogan here that we don't use as much anymore, is that this too shall pass. And sometimes these things have long shelf lives. But eventually they will pass. You know, nothing's beyond us here. There's an old friend of mine in Baltimore, and I used to go to him and I'd tell him about what problem I was having. He said, you know, Al, it's very simple around here. You just have to find a God bigger than your problem. And I said, well, how do I do that? He said, that's what AA is about. And I got it. You know, so that gets straightened out, and things are going pretty good, and we're rolling along again. And there's this one of the main problems that caused the separation in the marriage is that she wanted to have a child, and I didn't because I was approaching my I was approaching 50 years old, and I just didn't want to have a kid. I mean, financially we were pretty good, and things looked pretty good, freedom and everything that you'd want. And so we finally settled the difference, and I really secretly thought I won. And I, for some reason, I couldn't, she couldn't get pregnant, and the doctor said it was my fault. And she got pregnant after we gave up. I really think that AA, if you boil it down, this whole thing is let go and let God, but there's scratch marks all over it before you get there, And the scratch marks have my name on them, all right? And so here it comes, and I'm not happy. This isn't something that I wanted. I'm not happy. And if I had a blinking sign on my brain that I could bring up tonight in neon and say, I'm wrong. Hey, how's your sobriety? Could you sum it up in a couple words? I'm wrong, And so out came the child, and he's in the house, and, I just fall in love with a human being like I've never fallen in love with, It's like, whoa, wow, what is this little munchkin, God. And I'm starting to enjoy the experience, and all of a sudden my business partners, it goes south. One's ready to retire. It's hard to explain, but it goes south, and it was a good partnership, and it crashed and it burned. And it burned badly. And, the three things that will screw up an alcoholic quicker in sobriety than anything I know is sex, money, and self-importance. And self-importance is laced with self-pity. It's laced with it. And I'm starting to get a resentment again, like I haven't had. It's one of them slow burning resentments. They last a long time. Yeah. And I'm throwing prayer at it. I'm doing a lot of things. I'm going to meetings almost on a daily basis. I'm unclogging as much as I can the channels, the steps 10, 11, and 12. I'm talking to a sponsor. I'm doing this. I'm trying to reach out to other people. You'd always taught me was one of the things here is I have to become other-centered and not self-centered because I'm self-centered by nature, so I'm reaching out. Thank God you told me I don't have to feel like any of this stuff. I just need to do it. It's been very important to me. And so what my two partners end up doing is there's three junior partners coming along. One's retiring, one's going to retire. And they give the company over to the junior partners and bypass me. And I'm mad. And you don't sleep real well if you have resentments. And when I talk about resentment, you can throw fear in there too. I won't leave that one out. And I'm not sleeping real well. It's months and months and months and months. And months turns into a couple years, and it's not healing. Then my other partner, he gets mad at the new partnership. He closes his door. He refuses to talk to anybody. There's all sorts of fighting going on. I'm trying not to get into it. Hard not to get sucked into it from time to time. The seven most challenging words in Alcoholics Anonymous I have found is practice these principles in all our affairs. Okay? And I'm just, I know better, but I'm not doing better. I know I should cease fighting there. I know love and Todd, but I can't generate it. I'm coming in every day with my boxing gloves on, and I'm, thank God for AA, as I didn't respond. I didn't react on it, but they were on. And finally, one partner had retired. The other one was ready to. He came to me. He said, before I give up this, he said, you can be the sole owner now. I'm not going to bypass you. You can have 51%. If I had a middle finger to put up in his face, I would have done it. And I said, you can have your 51%. I said, I don't want any more. And after a couple years of that, I felt quite crispy inside. I was, thank God that I had a regimen of meetings and all the things I was doing, because two things never happened. One, I never felt like drinking. I never planned to take a drink, and I never blamed God once. Because you gave me the gift of God, that God's not here to punish me, and it's not an angry God trying to get me in trouble, that my problems are created by me. I got you. Okay. God is the ultimate solution to the difficulty. He's not the creator of the problem. I got it. It served me very well. And so, of course, with the turmoil, the marriage suffers again. I know this time we're heading for the divorce court. And my sponsor tells me I need to go to marriage counseling. I told him I'm not going. I'm not saying that was the right thing to do. I'm not telling you that you shouldn't go. I said I'm not going. I said I can't get her to go. I said I don't feel like going to a counselor. I've been in the field all of my life. I don't want to do it. I want to see where this goes. And I don't think the sponsorship recovered from that. It had some other problems in it as well. I will again take responsibility for that. I went to his funeral, and 1,500 people were there, and about 15 people got up and shared what a great relationship they had with him. He was a fabulous human being, and when all of them shared, I thought I didn't have that relationship. Yeah. So there's compatibility in here in sponsorship. Not everybody, even great sponsors here, are not compatible for everybody. You know? And at that time, I've got some new sponsorship. And I go to two friends that had divorces in AA, and I said, well, what do you do? And they said, this is very simple. This is what we did. Both of these guys did the same thing. And they said, we went to our ex-wives, and we said, what do you want? There is no lawyers. I'll sign the paper. And then you can take it to a lawyer and get it stamped. So I said, what do you want? She said, the house is paid for. I want this. It's paid. Now, I'm not saying I liked it. I'm not saying that I didn't have a lot of resentment. I did, but I did it. I knew that direction would work for me. It was workable. Even though it was very difficult, I gave it all. And they said the miraculous thing that we had in our lives was that a couple years later, because of us doing that and taking care of our ex-wives, the kids were all happy with us. And eventually the ex-wife was happy with us also. Now, would you rather have a court battle and be unhappy, or would you rather have a short-term pain and go? I said, I take the short-term, I do. And they said, on top of that, what you have to do, and next door was an A-frame across the horse pasture. And the friends that live next door, they're devout Christian. And I went over there and I said, hey, you know, you got that A-frame empty. Have you thought about renting? And they said, you know, that's a funny thing. A couple hours ago, we were praying to God to get that filled. Guess who's going to live there? So I lived right across the field from my kid so he could see me. And so they told me, they said, what you need to do, too, is you need to go make sure her lawn's mowed. You need to take out the trash. If she needs more money than the child support, you give it to her. You try to make her life easier. And I thought, what? I'm always giving this stuff up. You know. So I did it. And there's about four or five incidences that things weren't right. And I said, you know, you seem pretty loopy. I said, something's wrong here. You know, it was because of the Benadryl, or I didn't have enough sleep, and you know, I'd chalk it off. Okay, that's what it is. And she comes over one day, says, "I got something to tell you." And I said, "What do you got to tell me?" I said, "What could you possibly tell me?" You know? She says, "I've been drinking." I said, "What?" I said, "No, you're not." She said, "Yeah, I am." I said, "No, you're not." I said, no. I said, what were you thinking? That's the whole point for alcoholics. What are you thinking? I mean, I'm like, you gotta be crazy. That's why they call it insanity. I'm like, I felt like I got gut punched and the wind knocked out of me. I sat in a corner and I cried for hours. It was like the worst thing that could have ever happened. Heck with the business. Heck with the money. Heck with all that other stuff, the divorce. No. You didn't. That was a very, very tough thing on me. I just cried. Oh, God. You know, it'll make a neurotic out of anybody, I'm telling you. And I'm at wit's end. I'm just like, what? And I just go and I sit with you people and I absorb you. What a beautiful gift God has given us in this fellowship. I'm absorbing you. You know, and you taught me how to go to a meeting to make it work. They said you can't go to a meeting trying to get something. You got to go to a meeting to give. You got to come early. You got to reach out. Once you learn to go to meetings in a giving attitude. They become totally different meetings than when I'm coming tonight to see if you will make me laugh or if the meeting will have the right topic or, you know, whatever it is. Throw all that out. There's only one reason why you go to a meeting, and that's to carry a message of hope and recovery. That's it. There's no other reason. And you know what happened? In the last 15 years, I've heard there's bad meetings. Now, I have been to some meetings that probably not AA. They're mixed with a lot of other stuff. But a lot of people tell me I went to a bad meeting. I haven't been to a bad meeting since I changed my attitude towards you and found out I was the problem. And I'm asking God for help every day. You know, we have a daily reprieve contingent. Yesterday's reprieve doesn't count for today. It's today. And this thing, you know, it's like a crushing blow. And I'm like, man, what do I do now? And so I just keep going to the meetings, doing the things I'm supposed to do here. And I never lost hope because I sat with you on a daily basis almost. I never lost hope. I knew I'd get through this. And my sponsor said, "Is your kid happy?" I said, "Besides that one incident, yeah, he's pretty happy." He said, isn't that awesome? I said, "Yeah." I said, "It is, isn't it?" And so, you know, people think that, you know, relapse is a relapse. But I tell you, when it sits in your own house, it's pretty brutal, especially about a person you care about. You know, it's no laughing matter. And so we went through some incidences that weren't too pretty. I'm not going to get into the details of them. And she, I don't know if it was an argument in the house about it. I'm not telling you that I'm the best at this stuff. I don't remember if it was a conversation, if it was an argument, if it was me, but I said something to her, and I said, "You've been in this big book crowd of people for a long time. I think you need to step out of that. It works for them very well. I think you need to go out to Los Angeles, and you need to get a sponsor out of the Pacific group that has some structure, and they have a really good message. I think that's what you need to do." And like I said, that could have been in the midst of a fight. That could have been, I don't know where it came from, but we went to Philadelphia together. And she took my sponsor and said, "I need to meet with you." And he gave her three women's names. And he said, "You call one of these women." And really, you know, we're driving back and there's a lot of doubt involved in this stuff. And so she calls the woman. And the woman says, "Have you relapsed?" She said, "Yeah." She says, "I'm not going to put up with another one. Do you want to do this?" She said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, I want you to go to a meeting on a daily basis, and you can cut down to six a week. Here's the things I want you to do, the principles I want you to start living by." She said, "You have more knowledge of the big book than I have about the steps, and you're probably better at it. I don't have that, but I have some things you don't have, and I have sobriety." She said, "I sponsor a lot of women. I go all over the United States and Europe. I wake up at 5 a.m. starting to talk to women on a daily basis." She said, "This is what I do." And she has been sober ever since and not drank. And she's looking good. And she's looking sober. So a couple weeks ago, she comes on up and she said, "You know, you're ready to retire." And she said, "You know, the house is still in your name. They never took it out and the assets are there and there's a tax relief and, you know, you can get on my insurance and would you want to get married again? I might be sick enough. You know? God has a wonderful sense of humor. All right? We're going down to Virginia Beach for the 4th of July, just like a family. Lindell's in the back. I got the kid that I wasn't sure that I wanted. I got the ex-wife is sober, and I'm just driving along. God has a wonderful sense of humor here, you know. I tell you. This is one heck of a gift. Yeah, it's one heck of a gift. And, you know, the other night it was interesting, and you can see the impact of strong home groups and strong sponsorship. We had a young lady speak in our group on Thursday night, and she was a little young because when you're about 10 months sober, a lot of times it's, you know, you're just barely putting things together yet. And to give a talk, it was quite difficult for me. And this young lady came up, and we knew the sponsorship she came from out of Richmond, which is a very active AA community, very strong in the home groups. And she, for 10 months sober, I was going to get up and applaud. And what I thought after the meeting, this is the byproduct of those type of groups and that type of sponsorship, that this young lady can come up and deliver that type of talk at that length of time. Sponsorship is so important, and I've had, since Bob, I've had really four sponsors, all a little bit different in AA, which has been really good for me. They haven't all believed the same thing, okay? It's been good for me to have different takes from different people, just like going to different groups with different ways. And it helps me to take a look at myself, you know, and it helps me to adjust and not be crippled by my own self-centeredness or my own judgment in personal relationships. That there are other ways to do Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have to be very careful that I don't think that mine is the right way for everybody. Because that's not true. And here, things work out because nothing is above God. And when I say that, there's nothing above Alcoholics Anonymous. I can say God and AA almost in the same breath and say the same thing. I'm not one that can separate it. To me, it's whole inside of me. So God could have given this message to our friends in the medical community. But he didn't. But he allowed them to help us. Most of us today are very, very familiar with Dr. Silkworth and the doctor's opinion. I mean, you can hardly go to a meeting on the first step that that's not talked about. He could have given this message to our friends in the psychological department, but he didn't. But he allowed them to help us. History will bring up Carl Jung and associate him somewhere within the second step. I don't know if he gets the whole compliment of the second step, but he's certainly in there. And he could have given this message to our friends in religion, but he didn't. But he allowed us to allow them to help us, and we plagiarized a good bit of what they did, the Oxford group. God in his infinite wisdom and his generosity and his kindness to us gave the message to a broke down stock speculator named Bill Wilson in New York and a washed up proctologist named Dr. Bob in Akron. And what they had in common was alcoholism. And what developed out of their conversation was one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. Something happened, and what we find out in AA is that once you discover it and you're in AA, we call it the AA magic. There's something that happens here. And we can't totally put our thumb on it is when we're down and out and we go to an AA meeting and somehow without us saying a word, it answers what problem we're going through. And we walk out, we get a relief for a little while. Okay. There's no rhyme or reason sometimes other than God has his hand in this. And what we found is in that conversation, something came that most of us have needed all of our life prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, and today may still be need a mega dose of it, is contact with each other, connection. Connection is vital to sobriety. And God gave us that. One alcoholic talking to another. Now, what I have to be careful of in my life, and what I shared with you, and what goes on in my life, I got to make sure that there's nothing that gets in between me and you and that connection. Okay? Got to make sure. Now, one thing that got in between me and you was the knowledge of the big book. It got involved in the connection for a little while for me. As much as I love the little 8-year-old, okay, he cannot get in the way of my connection with you. Can't happen. I take him to a lot of meetings. I think Jake has probably been to over 500 meetings. I've taught him how to act in a meeting so he doesn't disrupt them. He calls it the boring meetings. And I said, Jake, you love your water park, right? He said, yeah. I said, this is my water park. Okay. He's been to 18 AA conventions. It's not about neglecting the family. It's about structure, how to make it all happen, you know. And that's what I do. I try to make it all happen. I cannot neglect my contact with you, because if it goes down here, it goes down everywhere else. I can't let money get in between me and you. I can't let job. I can't let fame. I can't let career. I can't let education. I've seen religion for some people get in between the connection. I've got to keep the connection wide open. It's my lifeline to my life. And I got a good one. You know, I get to go a lot of places. Like I said, I'm a mountain biker. I'm a road biker. I get to go out into the American deserts, which I love, Utah and Sedona, into Las Vegas, Blue Diamond. And, you know, the beautiful thing today is with the GPSs and with the cell phones is you can find a meeting wherever you go. Where in the old days, it was kind of hard. I wonder if the meeting stuck behind the rock up there, you know. Nowadays, when I land on a plane, I know where I'm going to the meeting just to adjust. That's the best thing for jet lag I've found, is I go sit in a meeting. And I get to discover and embrace this world. And I was riding through the Saguaro Cactus Desert outside of Tucson on my mountain bike. And I thought, you know what, when I go out, God, I need a freebie from you today. I want to go off my mountain bike by the cactus, okay? Just take me. This is the most beautiful thing in the world. Just let me go. And I want to go after I've gone to an AA meeting, okay? I want to have an AA meeting under my belt when I come, all right? Because I don't want to forget about you people, all right? I don't. Because you're everything to me. So I'd like to thank you. And with that, I may see you next year.